Welcome to the Pharmacy Quality Solutions Quality Corner Show, where we believe that quality measurement leads to better outcomes. Let us become your go-to source for all things related to quality and medication use in healthcare. We will hit on trending health topics as they relate to performance measurements and find common ground for payers and practitioners. We will discuss how the Eclip platform can help you with your performance goals, and we will also make sure to keep you up to date on pharmacy quality news. So buckle up and put your thinking cap on. The Quality Corner Show starts now.
Hello, Quality Corner Show listeners. This is your host, Nick Dorich, and we welcome you to episode 2 of season 2 of the Quality Corner Show. In addition, this is the second episode of our series focusing on mental health and depression. As a quick recap for episode 1, Tawny Smith from the University of Texas gave us an overview of how pharmacists, specifically community pharmacists, can contribute to addressing mental health and depression treatment. There was a lot of great information shared on how pharmacists can counsel patients on medication use, and we also touched on the importance of reducing stigma for these patients in the pharmacy. Healthcare providers, which obviously includes pharmacists, cannot truly help address patient needs unless we can put ourselves into the shoes of the patient, empathize with the patient, and understand their questions and concerns with disease management, including that potential medication action plan. Now, for episode 2, we are going to switch gears and look at how pharmacists, specifically community pharmacists again, and how they are involved with mental health and/or depression screenings. This topic is one that may be new to many of our listeners, and I'll admit that for myself, it's a topic that I haven't really explored before either. Like always, we'd like to bring on a subject matter expert, and for today, that will be Dr. Courtney Mossman. Courtney, welcome to the Quality Corner Show.
Thank you, Nick. I'm so excited to be with you this afternoon on the Quality Corner Show to talk about a topic that I really believe community-based pharmacists can be leveraged to have a tremendous impact on.
Great. Before we do get into today's discussion, Courtney, I'd like to learn more about you. If you don't mind, can you please share with our audience your background in pharmacy, your current work, and then any professional involvement and experience that you may have?
Sure. While I currently practice in a family medicine clinic, I've spent the majority of my career in community-based practice environments. And I actually got into pharmacy as a high school student when I was working in my local grocery store and was really impacted by the relationship that I saw the pharmacist have with his patients. And he was so much a part of their community and was just much more than that healthcare provider to them. And that's really what leveraged me and interested me in going into the pharmacy profession. So I went to pharmacy school at Ohio Northern University, and then following graduation, completed a community care practice residency at the Ohio State University College of Pharmacy with practice sites at an independent pharmacy and our state pharmacy association as well. Currently, I'm an associate professor of pharmacy at Wingate University School of Pharmacy, and much of my role focuses on preparing our student pharmacists for practicing in the community-based setting, as 60 to 70% of our graduates enter that practice setting when they graduate. I teach our pharmacy management course amongst many other community-based topics, and the core assignment in that course is for our students to create a business plan for a non-dispensing service in any practice setting. And I also teach our students about the policy and legislative process and how to advocate for their profession and their patients. So one of the things that I'm really excited about and getting to our topic today is preparing our students for mental health related screenings in our curriculum. I teach our students how to approach this topic in the community-based setting, thinking about workflow considerations and evidence about how impactful these interventions can be. And we also offer elective training in mental health first aid and question, persuade, refer, which is a suicide prevention gatekeeper training. My research is really starting to focus on the role of community-based pharmacists in mental health in recent years. And I'm working not only to identify how does our profession feel about taking on this new role and responsibility, but how do our stakeholders, so our patients, our collaborators on the healthcare team, feel about pharmacists getting into this space. And I'm hoping to use implementation science to identify best practices for designing interventions so that pharmacists can really have an impact on the growing mental health crisis in our community. And then within the profession, I've been a member of several pharmacy organizations and have really focused on trying to elevate practice opportunities within our profession and have chaired our policy and advocacy committee within the North Carolina Association of Pharmacists. And I'm currently a member at large for the American Pharmacists Association, Academy of Pharmacy Practice and Management.
Thank you, Courtney. Really excited to have this conversation today with you. You and I have known each other for a while, be it from North Carolina, and then also, as you stated, activity with APHA. And when we were looking at this topic, knew that we needed to speak with somebody that has a clinical focus, someone that understands and is thinking about also the implementation and operation of how this would work. So I was really excited when we could identify that we had the perfect guest speaker to come on and talk about this. Now, we're going to go ahead. We're going to jump into our discussion for today. And Courtney, we're going to have three primary questions to explore as it relates to the topic of mental health and depression screening in community pharmacies. So we're going to go ahead and jump into the first question. And as we jump into these questions, I would note we're going to plan on getting a little more technical than we typically could because this topic may be very new or unique to our listeners. Therefore, it will be important we really talk about the background and the how-to so that listeners can understand how they would go about implementing such a service. Courtney, let's get into our first question, which I'm going to break it into kind of a multi-part question. How prominent have mental health or depression screenings been in community pharmacies? What have successful models looked like? And finally, why should a community pharmacy practice consider implementation of mental health screenings?
Absolutely, Nick. So first, I would say when we were looking at how prominent are these screenings, they're more prominent than one might think, but they're certainly not a mainstay of the profession right now, like a vaccination program. So when I began my work in this area about 3 years ago, I thought there would be little to no data regarding mental health and depression screenings in community pharmacies, but there's actually a fair bit, especially when we look at pharmacists in Australia and Canada. They're really much further ahead than the United States on utilizing community-based pharmacists as mental health care providers and gatekeepers for those who need support and treatment. So for pharmacists who are interested in trying to implement these screenings, that's really the place to look for best practices. And when we look in the US, there's been about seven or so studies that have described depression screenings in community-based practice settings, most of which have been completed in either independent community pharmacies or in grocery store settings. So they're certainly growing in prominence, but are definitely, again, not a mainstay or an expected service for a typical community pharmacy. Now, when we move into the second part of your question, when we look at what have successful models looked like, I'm gonna try and highlight what I've consistently seen either in my own research or what I've seen from other published studies. So the first thing is making sure that the pharmacists have adequate training and preparation for this role. When we look at pharmacists who graduated just 5 or 10 years ago, so myself, I graduated in 2013, this was certainly not anything that we talked about in my curriculum. And so a lot of pharmacists who are interested in this area are going to need to do a continuing education program or doing a specialized training such as mental health first aid or again, question, persuade, refer that I mentioned briefly to get themselves the necessary skills to intervene with patients who may be having a mental health crisis. And additionally, there are many CE programs that are available across the country, and Washington State is actually the only state that requires pharmacists to complete continuing education or training in regards to suicide prevention. The next thing that I consistently see in services that are successful is buy-in from the pharmacist. So they have to see a need. They have to have a want to intervene with patients. And so there's actually a validated tool called the Attitudes Towards Suicide. And we conducted this survey both in student pharmacists in North Carolina and pharmacists and generally found pretty neutral attitudes towards suicide, which obviously we like to see supportive attitudes, but at least we're not seeing that our pharmacists have negative attitudes that could potentially withhold them from intervening with patients. Now, what I will say is there's definitely a disparity in the perceived role in sort of suicidal ideation assessment that I'm starting to see between student pharmacists and pharmacists. So pharmacists, about 45% view this as a professional responsibility, whereas 80% of students do. And so there's definitely some work to, again, make sure that pharmacists are viewing this as something that they have a stake or that they can have a role in. And whenever we conducted the survey in pharmacists, the majority of them had been in practice for 10 years or more. So again, really when we were starting to see some evolution in the profession and what we were preparing students for. The next thing that I see that's really important when you look at successful services is stigma around mental health and also sort of the perception of the role of the pharmacist. And so it's really important that pharmacists are comfortable approaching this very taboo and very sensitive topic because patients themselves have a lot of stigma where they are going to be hesitant to admit that they need help. And so our pharmacists need to make sure that they have a private area that they can have this screening and have this conversation with patients and that they market this service and that it's available, but that they don't say, come to, counter 3 for mental health screening. Additionally, engagement of the patient with a direct ask is super crucial. So there was a study that looked at utilizing bag stuffers for depression screening, and only 1 out of 50 patients returned. So it can't be a passive service. It has to be an intentional service where you're connecting and utilizing that rapport and trust that you've established with your patient and to intervene with them. And something else sort of in that stigma sort of environment or scenario is trying to normalize this service, that this is something that's being offered to all patients because the United States Preventative Services Task Force recommends that all adults be screened for depression and isn't because you have some sort of a red flag. Sort of wrapping up, the other key thing is making sure that there's a quick, efficient service. So we all know that the community practice environment can be crazy right now. There's a lot of demands, a lot of prescriptions that need to be filled. You've got phones ringing, vaccines that you need to give. And so utilizing tools like the PHQ-9 or PHQ-2, which is the patient health questionnaire, and utilizing the first 2 questions, if you get a yes to either, then completing the whole tool, that is super crucial to successful services. And then additional thing that I sort of want to highlight is transmission of these results or sort of communicating these results to the prescriber and connecting patients to care. One of the biggest barriers that I've seen in unsuccessful programs is that we identify patients who have a positive screen and then they fall through the cracks. And there was actually one study that found out of a positive screen, providers only responded to 27% of those. So we've got to have some sort of algorithm or referral to care. And then the last component of your question, sort of why should pharmacies offer this or should they? And in my opinion, a pharmacy should really consider implementation of these services because we have a public health crisis regarding suicide. Suicide is now one of the top 10 leading causes of death for the first time as of 2016. And when you look at the oath of the pharmacist, the first line states, I will consider the welfare of humanity and relief of suffering my primary concern. So this should really compel us as the most accessible healthcare provider to identify ways that we can have a meaningful impact on this public health crisis. When we look at patients and the types of healthcare they access, they go to their community pharmacy over 30 times a year, whereas they're going to their PCP provider about 4 times a year. And there's a huge gap in the amount of patients who are currently being screened for depression. So I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but the United States Preventative Services Task Force recommends that all adults be screened for depression. And each year, only about 2.25% to 5% of adults are actually screened. And so again, we've got a huge amount of patients that are currently flying under the radar and that we're missing this crucial diagnosis for.
Thanks, Courtney. You already covered a lot of detail and pointing out to our audience and our listeners that, yes, this may be a new service, but there's already a lot of information that's available and that can be referenced. When we talked about, when you looked at some of the screening and how this was made available, I want to point out to our audience and just have you confirm, most of this has been or sounds like it's been direct to the patient advertising promotion on these services. For most of these programs or services in the past, has that been the involvement or has there been any involvement from payers in supporting pharmacies with these types of endeavors?
Yeah, absolutely, Nick. So from the data that I have personally seen, it's all been patient facing and I've yet to really see any published literature that's payer facing where payers have been leveraged to sort of incentivize or have quality metrics around this to increase that screening rate amongst patients.
Thank you, Courtney. We'll get into our next question, and that'll lead us into some next parts for our conversation. So community pharmacist talking about the advantage for getting screenings done in the community pharmacy location. We know that's a big advantage because patients visit their pharmacy and they see their pharmacist more than they do typically any other healthcare provider. That's been touted as one of the advantages for a long time, especially when you couple that with the high level of trust that patients have with their pharmacist. This is all good news. Now let's talk about the, I don't want to say bad news, but room for growth, the room for opportunity. Quite simply, pharmacists have the opportunity, right? But they may not be explicitly ready or trained to provide this service. I know that when I was in pharmacy school, we certainly learned about mental health and treatment for mental health disease, but it's been a while. And when you're, it's learning it in class for a short period of time is different than doing it day in, day out as part of your focus. So Courtney, the question for you directly, are pharmacists fully ready and activated to provide a service such as mental health, depression, suicide screening, et cetera? Or do we as a profession generally need to work up our training a little bit so that we can make this a more readily available resource?
Thanks so much for this question, Nick. So when I think holistically about the profession, I definitely think that we are ready to offer this type of service. When you look at pharmacists, you mentioned we are a trusted profession. We prepare our students and prepare our practitioners for having sort of that trusted patient provider role. Our students are getting training in motivational interviewing and various communication techniques. So when you look at foundationally, I absolutely think we're ready. Now, when you look at the actual practice and sort of skill associated with, again, a very sort of taboo sensitive topic in our culture around mental health, I definitely think there's some growth that our pharmacists need to have in order to take this service on, to feel comfortable with it, and to really do a fantastic job on reaching the patients that are currently flying under the radar. And so I think our pharmacists need to get some specific training from validated programs about how do we have these really tough conversations. And there's a lot of misconception amongst pharmacists and other healthcare providers alike about how to have these types of conversations. So a lot of times folks think that if you ask a patient if they're experiencing suicidal ideation, that you might make them more likely to act upon those impulses, which the data doesn't support at all. And so I think our pharmacists definitely need to get training such as mental health first aid, which is now being offered in a virtual and blended learning environment, which makes it much more convenient and accessible to busy community pharmacists. There's also question, persuade, refer training, which is specifically focused on gatekeeper training for suicide. And it's a 2-hour training for all types of healthcare providers. And actually, both of these trainings are targeted towards lay people. And then the Washington State Pharmacy Association actually has a 3-hour training program as well on suicide prevention. So even pharmacists who are outside of Washington are able to complete that training through them. So there's some really great, easily accessible, short digestible opportunities for pharmacists to get more comfortable with having these crucial conversations. And the National Community Pharmacists Association actually offers ACPE credit for mental health first aid. So really great sort of return on investment for pharmacists, especially as we're at the end of the year and everyone needs their CE hours. And then there's just general resources that pharmacists need to be familiar with as well, such as the Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 800-273-TALK or 8255. And that's actually going to be evolving into a 911 type of line in the coming year, so 988. So again, definitely some room for pharmacists to grow, but I don't think that it's a huge leap for our pharmacists to get ready for this practice opportunity.
Courtney, again, lots of great detail. Two items that I have as a quick response. The first, quick spoiler alert for our listeners. Next week's episode, episode 3 of this series, will be focusing on mental health first aid. And that's a topic that may be new to some folks. I hope everybody listens in for that episode to learn more about that topic. The other part that you spoke about, Courtney, and that pharmacists need to have some of this training and need to be moving along. You also referenced earlier Oath of the Pharmacist, and there's a component of the Oath of the Pharmacist about commitment to lifelong learning. I tie these things in or reference them together because as pharmacists are actively treating patients, whether it be filling medications, working on patients and their medication adherence, depression, mental health can have an impact beyond just that singular disease state. And if you're not taking, if we're not aware, if we're not actively treating that in conjunction with some of those other components, working on a patient's adherence for their diabetes medications, just as an example, may not be the most fruitful exercise you can do to improve that patient's health if we're not addressing the underlying mental health issues. So there's a lot of information and studies about general patient wellness and improving patient outcomes where, again, whether it's diabetes, cardiovascular outcomes, those are important things to healthy life for the patient, right? But in terms of making those treatments effective for those disease states, we need to manage the mental health. So you mentioned that this is a key point for pharmacists to be able to do. I would echo that sentiment and point it out that if we're not addressing that part of it, any other work we're doing with the patient, not that it's not well-intentioned and good, but that it may be missing the most key factor to making that patient have a successful and healthy life going forward. So really great context there, Courtney. I appreciate you explaining it like you did. We'll go to our third and final question related to this topic. And the reason, actually, Courtney, that we had reached out to you was that you had recently had a published article in the Journal of the American Pharmacists Association, or JAFA, about the patient and prescriber perceptions of community pharmacist depression screenings. Knowing that we wanted to explore this topic and that your article was very timely, was wondering if you could help us explain a little bit more on that, just that, patient prescriber perception. We talked about pharmacist implementing, we talked about pharmacist training, but what about the readiness from the patient? What about the readiness from a prescriber to see that pharmacists are offering this service?
Sure. And thank you so much for inviting me to talk about this project. I'm so proud of it, as it was actually work that I completed as part of the National Association of Chain Drugstores Foundation Faculty Scholars Program, which provides implementation science and qualitative research training to faculty focused in patient care research. So if we have any listeners who are young faculty who are interested in advancing clinical services in the community-based setting, I highly recommend that training program to them. So first I'll talk about our patient perceptions, and then I'll talk about what we found in terms of provider perceptions. And so the first thing that we really observed whenever we looked at patient perceptions, there were three key themes that sort of emerged from our study. And the first thing was there was disparate views of depression screenings provided by community pharmacists. So some patients were super excited for this opportunity and definitely felt that community pharmacists could have a role in identifying patients who are currently, again, sort of being missed by their primary care provider and maybe don't have a primary care provider. However, there were some patients who also felt it was a little bit outside of the scope of the pharmacist and felt that it was still sort of a physician or a prescriber type issue. So we're still seeing sort of two tails of patients and sort of what they view the pharmacist and their role as. And I'll talk a little bit more about sort of what we saw to sort of explain some of those difference in views amongst patients. The second theme that we identified from our patients was sort of that stigma component in terms of privacy and confidentiality and discretion were super important to the patients in the study. So having this intervention being done in a private room where nobody can overhear the conversation, where it could be that the patient's going into this patient care room for a vaccine or any number of services, really emerged as something that was crucial to our patients. And what I actually thought was pretty interesting is we initially were planning to offer this service as part of our medication synchronization program during the phone reach out to see if any medication changes had occurred. And our patients were actually a little bit more trepidatious or a little bit less comfortable with that phone conversation, and they felt that you lost that personal connection a little bit with the pharmacist. The third theme that we sort of identified from our patients were that concerns regarding mental health stigma were prevalent, and that it was super important to normalize this depression screening as something that was being offered to all patients, not certain patients that had any type of red flags. And what I really saw from patients during these interviews too were sort of stigma from how they answered the question. So they said, well, I might be apt to lie, or I don't experience depression. And so there is very much a sure, like you can offer this service, but it's not relevant to me. And so that tells me that there's still just so much work that we need to do to getting sort of support in the fact that it's okay to have a mental health condition. It's not a scarlet A, and that it's a health condition just like diabetes, just like high blood pressure. Now, when we look at our prescriber themes, our prescribers were overwhelmingly supportive of this service. Now, what I will say for folks who are listening who are interested in implementing this service is we had a very special or had a very homogenous sort of provider population, which can limit external validity. So our prescribers were all independent prescribers, so they all had their own practice, and the majority of them were psychiatrists, so they specialized in mental health. But our prescribers really supported community pharmacists offering these services and really viewed it as an opportunity to spread the net and to get more patients sort of identified who need care and who need treatment. The second theme that we found was they were supportive, but they felt that it was crucial that pharmacists develop an appropriate algorithm based on the acuity of care for patients. So they didn't want pharmacists to identify that the patient was positive for a depression screening and then leave them hanging. They wanted them to refer that patient to potentially an emergency department if they felt that they were at risk of harming themselves, or making sure that they were getting into a prescriber who could initiate treatment. And they very much wanted it to be communicated to patients that this was a positive test result. It was a positive screen. It wasn't a diagnosis. And then the third theme was they wanted to have the communication of all results. So I thought prescribers would only want to know when patients were positive, but they valued that negative test result just as much as they valued that positive. And so they wanted all of the results communicated to them. We tried to find what way was best to communicate these results. As previous studies, one of the barriers was found to be a lack of response to fax communication. And our providers actually preferred fax communication. Again, I think that's probably because we are working with an independent practice that's going to have a smaller volume of faxes compared to the health system clinic that I practice in, where we have, I think, 9 prescribers, if I remember correctly, a huge volume of faxes. And so one of the things that's really crucial for folks who want to implement these services is having an intentional conversation with the providers that frequently send patients to your pharmacy of how can we implement this service so that it works for you, so that we're providing holistic and comprehensive care for our patients and we're not having people continue to fall through the cracks. Because you're going to open both yourself and that prescriber up to liability if you identify a patient with a positive screen that you're then not doing anything to sort of help and support. And the last sort of theme that we identified was a mutual theme between both our patients and our prescribers, and sort of goes back to that first theme that I shared of our patients having disparate views of the role of the pharmacist. And both our patients and our prescribers, their view and sort of their attitudes towards this role for pharmacists was heavily influenced by their relationship with the community pharmacist. So the pharmacist having a trusted relationship, having a personal connection with that patient, as well as having a history of working with that prescriber, having sort of some trust and some integrity build up, some stock of knowing that they could depend on you, was really crucial to how those providers and how those patients viewed pharmacists getting into this space. And when you look at other studies, they've sort of found similar observations to what we found in our study.
Thanks, Courtney. Again, lots of great detail. I'll pick out a few things. Something that we have referenced in numerous episodes of the Quality Corner Show when it comes to pharmacy is that if it's not documented, it never happened. And that becomes really a key point here as it relates to the mental health screening and the follow-up with the providers, with the prescribers that may be involved. And I'd like to explore that topic a little bit further with research that you've done, your particular projects, or perhaps with other projects that you've reviewed. Does it start there? Because if you're a pharmacy that's going to be doing these types of screenings, you mentioned it, and I would think that you would need to knock on some doors, either physically or metaphorically, with local providers to say that, hey, our pharmacy team, we're doing these services, we're doing mental health screenings. We want to actively be working with the local providers, prescribers that's there, because we don't want to fragment care. We don't want to fragment care any further or have it siloed. So from that aspect, does it start with going to the local providers and prescribers, or do we build it and start getting some of the results? How does that work functionally?
Yeah, absolutely, Nick. So I think that, you know, which comes first, the cart or the horse, is going to depend on that specific pharmacy and sort of what their relationship with the local prescribers looks like. But if you got to have your prescribers on board and willing to play, or I think you're doing more harm than good than identifying these patients and then having your prescribers not respond to these faxes and leaving the patient hanging and potentially, you know, unearthing some feelings and or some concerns that then they have nobody to sort of help them through. So when you look at really best practices, and this sort of gets back to the implementation science component of my project, you've got to really figure out and begin with the end in mind. And one of the key components of implementation science, specifically with my project, with the consolidated framework of implementation research, is the outer setting. So looking at what's going on in sort of the healthcare environment outside of your specific care setting that is going to facilitate whether or not this service is successful or not. So I very much view that if you really want to do this service and you want to do it well, you've got to do exactly what you described and starting having conversations with your prescribers first before you implement this service. Now, you might do some of the baby steps first in-house and make sure that you figure out the workflow, and maybe you do a small pilot project with some patients that are longstanding patients of your pharmacy to really work out the kinks, to be able to describe to that provider, this is what the service flow is really going to look like. But before you really hang your hat on this service, before you start marketing it to your patients, I definitely think having that conversation with the prescribers that are sort of the frequent flyer prescribers to your pharmacy is absolutely crucial in making this service a reality. And I think that's why we've seen a lot of challenge in community pharmacy with sort of enhanced services, clinical services, non-dispensing services, whatever you want to call them, is we really haven't used these implementation science principles consistently and haven't thought about sort of that, you know, healthcare doesn't occur in the vacuum of just that community pharmacy.
While we have barely scratched the surface on this topic, I also recognize that we've provided a tremendous amount of insight for today's podcast. And that's all due to you, Courtney. You've provided a lot of really great content, a lot of very careful considerations. I love hearing the thoughts on implementation science. When I think about the quality improvement process, it needs to be defined with a process. So your point of view on a topic that is relevant, that's timely, that's a service that pharmacists can provide, but thinking about it in that scientific aspect, but also thinking through the components that make it a successful business endeavor also become very important for us. But Courtney, thank you very much for this context. As a healthcare provider, we know that pharmacists can play an important role in assisting patients that may be struggling with mental health. And we know that pharmacists can be very innovative when it comes to helping their patients. So we do hope that this information today helps to inspire others so that you can further promote positive health outcomes in your community. Courtney, we're now getting to the part of the podcast, since we've covered our primary questions and topics, we get to one question that's still somewhat tied into pharmacy, but we like to approach it from a fun, unique aspect based on our guest for these episodes. Reference at the beginning that you and I, through some shared experiences, have had the opportunity to work and to know each other. And aside from being a great pharmacist and being a very proud native of the state of Ohio, I also know you to be a very big fan of one of the favorite things on the internet, and that being cats. There's many of us that know and that love them as our furry little household friends. There's many reasons why cats are popular on the internet, either for their antics, their cuteness, or for the major motion pictures based on plays that are actually very poorly done. But we know cats are well loved. We also know that pharmacists are very well received and loved by the patients in the community. Knowing that for you, you're a fan of both cats and pharmacists that are out there, I'd like to hear from your perspective, what are some of those common features? What are some of those common traits or themes that pharmacists and cats share that make them such wonderful things?
Oh man, Nick, you're making me think on the spot here. So when I think about common traits, I think we both get a little hungry or a little angry whenever we're hungry. So I think about myself when I worked in community pharmacy, I got hangry real easy. Or in my cats, if they don't get their breakfast as soon as I am up and my feet hit the floor, I have some explaining to do. I also think that both can be lovable if they're in the right mood. So again, getting back to that hangry component, And I think both are a frequent source of memes on the internet, which you alluded to a little bit. So I think about my favorite pharmacy memes, cat memes are frequently appearance in my lectures as well. So two common themes there between cats and pharmacists that I could think of on the spot. But both are dear loves of my life. My cats are spoiled and are like children. And hopefully I've communicated today my passion for the profession of pharmacy.
As I was thinking about this question, Courtney, something that came to mind for me was just pure tenacity. Pharmacist, when it comes to being a healthcare provider, hands-on, day in, day out, really having to tackle a lot of different things, whether it's related to insurance coverage for a patient, getting out in front of the counter and counseling on OTCs, counseling a patient on a new medication. There's a lot of things that pharmacists do. There's an inherent curiosity and that's there, which cats share. And there's also this element of this fearlessness to do the right thing and take the approach there that's going to have that benefit. So I think those are some of the things that I'd point out for our friends, the cats, but also for pharmacists, things that make them excellent.
Yeah. I actually just thought of another one while you were talking. I think about my cat, as you had highlighted while we were getting ready for the podcast, frequent appearances from cats typically in our life of Zoom right now and the audio. So my cat frequently, when I'm lecturing, jumps up on our printer trying to jump on top of our bookcase. And she is not a particularly agile cat, and it's not a good life decision for her, but she is persistent as ever. And so I think about community pharmacists, hopefully, you know, we're making wiser decisions about what we're persistent for. And I think that's very much the case. But I think of a community pharmacist, and we continue to work and strive on, you know, meeting the needs of our patients, even when there's not an easy path forward to do that.
Well said, Courtney. Yes, the working in the best interest of the patients, that persistence, I have not seen that from anybody else. Pharmacists are really unique in that patient forward approach. Courtney, we're going to go out and close now for today. And I, again, thank you for joining. And I hope the information that was shared today has been very informative for our listeners. And even more, I hope it inspires other pharmacists to look at developing and implementing mental health screening operations for their patients. Thanks, Courtney. For our listeners, could you tell us how they might be able to connect with you if they have further questions or if they'd like to find out more about your work?
Yeah, I'd love to connect with people who are interested in this area. So one method is from my email. So it's c.mospan, that's M-O-S as in Sam, P as in Paul, A-N, at wingit.edu. I also have LinkedIn, or I'm frequently on my Twitter. So my handle is at Courtney Marie, and that's C-O_RTNEY-MARIE.
Courtney, thanks for joining, and I hope the information you've shared today has been informative for our listeners, and I hope it's inspired other pharmacists to look at developing their own mental health screenings and their operations for patients. While today we focused on the mental health screenings and that implementation, we're going to bring yet again a new topic for next week. So our guest for the next episode, we already spoiled it earlier in this episode, is going to focus on the topic of mental health first aid. That may sound like a new phrase or topic for some of you, but I can assure you it will be informative and educational. As we are continuing our series on mental health, I would again like to reference resources that are publicly available for mental health. This does start with and include the crisis text line. So you can text hello to 741-741. The crisis text hotline is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week throughout the United States. The crisis text line serves anyone in any type of crisis, connecting them with a crisis counselor who can provide support and other information. Other resources include the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is call 800-273-TALK. That is 800-273-8255. Or you can chat with Lifeline at suicidepreventionlifeline.org/chat. Courtney did reference earlier in this episode that starting in July 2022, there will be a new 3-digit phone number similar to 911, but for people specifically experiencing a suicidal ideation crisis. For your reference, again, that number is 988, and again, that will be starting in July 2022. Finally, physicians, other healthcare providers can get their own support by calling 1-888-409-0141. With that, we are going to close this episode of the Quality Corner Show, and there is one final message from the PQS team.
The Pharmacy Quality Solutions Quality Corner Show has a request for you. Our goal is to spread the word about how quality measurement can help improve health outcomes, and we need your help in sharing this podcast to friends and colleagues in the healthcare industry. We also want you to provide feedback, ask us questions, and suggest health topics you'd like to see covered. If you are a health expert and you want to contribute to the show or even talk on the show, please contact us. You can email info@pharmacyquality.com. Let us know what is on your mind, what we can address, so that you are fully informed. We want you to be able to provide the best care for your patients and members, and we wish all of you listeners out there well.